Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
This is day number 1,083 of the Donald J. Trump presidency, about 303 days left to the 2020 general election. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Websites, please bookmark HagmanReportLive.com, HagmanReport.com. Also, please subscribe on YouTube to our YouTube channel, the official Hagman Report. Please do that, and as well as follow us on social networking, although that seems counterintuitive as we break away from the YouTube platform and such. It does some certain things with the algorithms, and it gets the word out more. All right. Biggest cause of death, the greatest cause of death. By the way, I don't have a monitor there, just saying. You know, how you doing, Eric the Tech? You doing well? All right. Good job. Thank you. No, that's good. All right. Biggest cause of death in 2019, but you know what it is, infanticide. The killing of unborn babies, 345,672, nearly 13,000 more than the previous year. You've got dozens of individuals caught setting fires in Australia, bushfires in Australia. You've got a Muslim teen accused of starting grass fires in Australia and laughing about it as he leaves the courtroom. You've got the leftist meltdown over President Trump's surgical strike against Soleimani. Now, regardless of what you think, all right, now Donald Trump came out and said this is to prevent World War III. Folks, go back to the Arab Spring. Go back to Benghazi, what happened at Benghazi. It's so critical for everyone to understand what happened at Benghazi. It's so critical for people to understand, really, that the Arab Spring was not a spontaneous uprising of Islamic discontent or individuals in search of freedom. No. This was an orchestrated attack by Western intelligence agencies against the power structure to shift the power from Saudi Arabia, the Saudis, to Iran under Obama. Remember, $150 billion payment to Iran, and then that cash payment. Oh, how that is, the $1.8 billion in pallets of cash to Iran. Compliments of Obama, and you have to understand, too, John Kerry, preceded by Hillary, Diane Rodham, the yak, Clinton. It's all beginning to fit. President Trump was interviewed by Rush Limbaugh, mentioned the Logan Act. And all I can say is paging Sally Yates. Okay. With that, a lot to talk about, too, domestically here with respect to what's taking place in Virginia. And this is not just limited to Virginia, but this Virginia, to me, is a beta test. And there's a lot of important information to really talk about. Now, as I bring this into focus and clarity today, I want to just say I'm so proud to announce that Keith Hansen is with me this hour and will be with me again tomorrow and Thursday, I believe it is. I've got to double check the schedule, but just going to be being with me the entire week or the majority of the entire week except for Thursday. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things because this is in the run-up, of course, to the Keith Hansen show. Following the Hagman Report. Oh, you're not going to want to miss that. More information as the week is unfolded. Keith, how you doing, my friend?
Happy New Year, my friend. Great to be with you.
I'll tell you what, it's a great New Year. 2020, both looking forward, and always, as always, 2020, hindsight is 2020. So it's going to be an interesting year, to say the least. Thanks for coming on today, and thanks for joining me, and thanks for your gift, your, it's really a sacrifice of your time as you talk to people about, conservative issues, issues that matter most under your name, Keith Hansen, and, as a conservative talk show. So thank you for that. But, let's get right into this here. Following the break, the Christmas and New Year break, what's on your mind the most? What's upset you the most that made you go to the gym and punch the bag a few more times than you had to?
Well, I got to tell you, it's really kind of what's been dominating is, of course, the Virginia situation, the Texas church shooting, and then also the situation that was unfolding in Iraq. And surprisingly, now this announcement that American troops are going to be withdrawn from Iraq, which, you know, there were a couple of media outlets that were calling it a preemptive surrender by Nancy Pelosi. So, I mean, you know, geez, a lot of stuff to talk about, definitely.
Right.
I know you wanted to get into the Virginia thing, and you and I had a pretty interesting conversation off air about the state of affairs right now in Virginia, what's happening, and I think really what dominates the cycle here and the conversations that people are having are the what ifs, because there is such a huge potential for so many things to happen, and not a lot of those things are good.
That's right. You know what I'm really fearful that's going to happen is nothing. Okay, now I don't want something to happen, obviously, in Virginia. I certainly no one wants conflict, internal conflict, civil war, whatever. No one's looking for that. But what most concerns me is that the masses will fall for one of these play fakes. Meaning that, it appears that the governor, the state legislature is pulling back saying, okay, you know what? We're not going to pass Senate Bill 64 or House or whatever the three bills are. We're not going to entertain that. Or if we do, we're certainly going to temper it with grandfathering in the existing weapons and this illusion of compromise. There cannot be any compromise over this issue. In my view, they've got to be put down. These laws or these anticipated laws have to be put down. There cannot be any compromise.
I thought you were talking about the politicians.
Well, them too.
Down, like a rabid dog. Yes,
well, yeah, them too.
That's what we need to start talking about. No, there is no capitulation, or I should say there is no compromise on our part. Here's the one thing that I want everybody listening to remember. Compromise is surrender on an installment plan. That's all it is. Because the progressives, the Democrats, the socialists, the communists, whatever you want to call them, they don't compromise. They expect us as conservatives, right-wingers, patriots, they expect us to compromise. Well, you know, we want 100%, but, you know, we'll just get them to take 95. And then the next time it rolls around, we take 95 again. We're constantly giving. And, you know, people ask all the time, geez, how did we get so far off track? Well, we've gotten so far off track, Doug, because we continue to try to compromise in the interest of playing nice. And how many times, just on this program alone, have you and I had the conversation about conservatives, people on the right wing, patriots, we're too damned nice. That's the problem. We want people to like us. We want to be the nice guy. It is no longer appropriate to be nice. Remember
Speaking.
Roadhouse, Patrick Swayze, I want you to be nice until it's time to not be nice. Now is the time to not be nice, because tyrants and bullies and criminals and thugs only understand one thing, and that is force. They don't understand niceness. They don't understand ethics. They don't understand anything other than their own will and our compromise, our giving in to what they hold the line for. Quite frankly, I'm fed up with it.
Speak it, brother. And I could not have said that any better. I believe that the time for playing on our side, the time for playing nice is over. We can't do this anymore. We have to play just like the leftists play, the communists in our government, the socialists in our government. There are no rules. They follow no rules. So how can we win if we are impeded by rules that are not followed by the other side. It's just impossible. So we've got to reevaluate our tactics.
There's two ways. There's two ways. And, you know, we've talked about, I'll use the example of how we've talked about Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, and they're the legislative radicals. And then you have the insurgent radicals. These are the people that want to, this is the Antifa groups. They want to take it to the streets. Okay. Well, those are really our two choices. We can either take this change and facilitate this change legislatively. And by legislatively, what I mean is start electing and demanding that these elected officials, not leaders, but representatives. Remember, sovereign people, free people don't have leaders. We have people to represent us, but they are not our leaders. We need leaders, or we need representatives that are now looking at the Constitution as a guideline and not as a roadblock.
Thank you.
But this notion that, you know, somehow, some way, the Constitution's a living, breathing document and it's designed to ebb and flow and change with the whims of society is absolute and utter horse manure. It is not a living, breathing document. It is a document that was put a quill on parchment specifically so that way there it could be read and applied, not interpreted. Which, remember, the Constitution of England was largely oral. So there was the passage of the Constitution of England and then the interpretation of that which was passed on orally.
Okay.
Putting quill to parchment did two things. Number one, it indelibly documented the intentions of the founding fathers, number one. And number two, it was also designed to be an act of resistance against the British crown.
Precisely. Now, you brought in laws, the Constitution and such. I had sent you earlier, pre-show, an article that appeared in the Federalist. I'm not sure if you had time to review this, but it deals specifically with something that I'm not sure Americans are familiar with, or the majority of Americans are familiar with, and that's a case that may be entertained by the Supreme Court under the name of Warman versus Healy. Now, I've referenced this in previous shows or previous interactions I've had, and this is about the United States, the United States Courts of Appeals for the First Circuit on appeal from the U.S. District Court for the District of Massachusetts upheld Massachusetts' ban on assault weapons, in quotation marks, whatever they are, and ammunition magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds. Now, Warman has been appealed to the Supreme Court, and we'll see if they entertain this. But that has the potential to decide federally what, the place of the Second Amendment in a larger sense. And again, the link is up at HagmanReport.com, but it's Warman versus Healy. And when you unpack that article and when you look at all of the distinctions within that and the nuances within that, you'll see that how schizophrenic the laws by both federal and state laws are with respect to our rights to keep and bear arms. And I just, mm-hmm. Look, Virginia to me is a kind of a bellwether or a beta test. I don't like that phrase, but it's kind of like a beta test for the rest of the nation. Cause right behind Virginia, you got 12, 13 states looking to duplicate what Virginia is doing. So I think that the problem is much bigger. I think the problem is, this is about, I don't want to be gross, but this is like a boil about ready to burst here. And I believe this is this is our line in the sand. If there was ever a line in the sand, this is it. So anyway, all of that said, I'm very unhappy, and I hope that we as patriots can fight back these tyrants who want to take away our rights.
Well, let me ask you this, because and I'll tell you, some of the best conversations that we have aren't actually on air. They're right. You know, when we're having you call me up to ask a question or vice versa, and it winds up going into an hour and a half long conversation. And I wish those are the types of conversations that we could air. But that notwithstanding, you know, the last conversation that we had off air was really about how I see the progressives right now painting themselves into a corner. Because I mean, you're seeing this groundswell of resistance against these pieces of legislation. The 20th is coming up. January 20th is coming up very, very quickly. And so now you're looking at a situation where, you know, what's ultimately going to wind up happening here if they, the progressives, wind up capitulating to the whims of the people who have risen up and said, no, we're not going to accept this, well, that sets a very dangerous precedent. Now, the question is, are the progressives power hungry enough and are they stupid enough to actually try to push this with force? Now, you know, when force in how we would traditionally think of force, well, you know, you had mentioned and we were talking about this piece of legislation that now attacks individuals who are facilitating resistance against the implementation and enforcement of these, you know, what is believed to soon be state law. It's not a law yet, but it's a lot of people believe that it's going to be signed into law, that they're not going to wind up sending it back. That being said, now you're using the power of money to go after people. Okay, well, if you don't want to enforce this law and you're going to continue to entertain this notion that you're a sanctuary county or sanctuary municipality, then we're going to terminate you and we're going to cut off all of your benefits and we're going to cut off your retirement. And we're going to punish you by attacking the purse. That's going to be the force that we wind up using. And I'll tell you, Doug, what's frightening about that is it's a powerful motivator. Because you have people, I think, who are willing to stand up and take up arms and to stand their ground and say, no, we are not about to give an inch. But when you attack a person's livelihood, when you attack a person's ability to support their family or support themselves or maintain a lifestyle that they've come to know and love and appreciate and for all intents and purposes expect, that can be a powerful motivator. And it makes me wonder whether or not that in and of itself has the singular ability to achieve their goal, which is to get as many people on our side to give in and capitulate as possible.
Okay. All interesting. I mean, I think that if there's anything I could get anyone off the couch, it would be that. Hey, you're going after my livelihood. People have killed for less, by the way. But just to be clear, we're talking about in the Commonwealth of Virginia, right now, we're talking about three anticipated pieces of legislation. Just to be real clear, Senate Bill 16, introduced by Dick Sazalaw, which essentially bans all of the semi-automatic, anything but a revolver, essentially bans everything. Senate Bill 64, introduced by Senator Louise Lucas, and that's an interesting bill because it bans teaching people like you who teach, handgun classes or gun classes, right, among other things. And then House Bill 67 introduced by Lee Carter. And that's the money bill. That's the one that if you don't comply with our laws, the laws that we pass, if you say, well, I'm a sanctuary sheriff, then gone is your job, your pension, your health care. It's gone. And you're subject to fines and other sanctions.
Yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. So that last thing has teeth and could very well be the impetus for what we see come next. I don't know.
Well, I had a person ask me the other day. They said, well, you know, I thought this whole weapons thing had been settled with the Supreme Court cases, McDonald and with Heller. And I said, you know, here's the thing. And of course, I'm not an attorney and I'm not giving legal advice or anything else like that. But, you know, having spent a significant and continuing to spend a lot of time working as an expert witness in the courts on firearms laws and use of force applications, I felt it appropriate to opine on this. The question was, well, I thought that this whole situation, all of these what are perceived to be unconstitutional gun laws were settled. The question was settled. As the progressives like to say in the context of climate change, that it was settled science when it came to this because of Heller and McDonald. Here's the thing that you've got to understand, and I think to put it clearly for people, that a municipality or a state, whatever, I mean, a city, county, town, municipality, state, they can pass whatever laws or ordinances they want to. Ultimately, it's up to a person who feels as though they have been harmed in some way, that they've suffered a articulable or demonstrable loss, to then file suit and work their way up. So the law remains a law, even if it's completely wrong, if it's completely illegal, it's completely unconstitutional, that law remains on the books until such time as a court says, no, you can't do this anymore. And so what's the average amount of time that it would take to go through that process? From the time the law hits the books, people start feeling the effect of that law until a person can find an attorney, come up with the money. And this is, I think, what a lot of them bank on, that the average person doesn't have the amount of money to be able to, you know, quote, fight City Hall and take a case all the way up to the Supreme Court. That's where you've got the lobbying organizations that'll look at a case and say, okay, well, you know, this is a case that could have some significant legal precedent potential. Right. And so we'll take this on and we'll wind up running with it. And certainly that was the case in McDonald and in Heller. But ultimately what these Supreme Court cases boil down to are certified questions. Okay. And now, so the to the best of my understanding here with the case that's at the center of this article, this Warman versus Healy, ultimately what it's going to boil down to is the question of whether or not it's, you know, it's a common usage firearm, or if it falls outside of that common usage firearm.
Okay. Stop right there. Let's talk about common usage, because the argument by the left is common usage at the time the amendment was written. Therefore, anything above a musket or a cannon is off limits. Well, then doesn't, if you take that example and apply it to the First Amendment, you mentioned quill pen earlier. Quill pens versus computer, common usage. Then I'll tell you what, you shouldn't, if you're in the media, then you're limited to a quill pen and a piece of parchment. If that's your argument, doesn't that make sense?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. You know what else makes sense to me?
Go for it.
The rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Seems pretty damn straightforward to me.
Yeah, I didn't see any hesitation in that statement.
There's no ands, there's if, there's no buts, it's always like when, well, I support the Second Amendment, comma, but, okay? Well, no, you don't see that in the Second Amendment.
Right.
The rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Amen, brother. That's right.
And what's interesting is that this particular article goes on to cite a Webster's Dictionary definition that was used. It was cited in the Heller case of arms as weapons of offense or armor for defense.
Very important citation there. Go ahead, continue.
So, the other thing too is, and I'm reading from this article. On one hand, Heller found that the Second Amendment protects a fundamental right, as the court observed in U.S. versus Cruikshank, existed before the Constitution was adopted. Heller described it as the individual right to possess and carry weapons in case of confrontation, including all instruments that constitute bearable arms. Then it goes on to talk about the definition from 1828 out of Webster's. However, Heller erred in ways that could threaten the rights to arms via Warman and beyond, as if the opinion were written by multiple people who gave no deference to what his or her co-authors had written, and it may have been, Heller contradicted its all-instruments declaration, imposing two unsupportable limitations on the types of arms the Second Amendment protects the right to keep and bear.
Very well stated in that article. By the way, folks, the article that I'm referencing was originally published on November 18th, 2019 in the Federalist, on thefederalist.com. It's linked at HagmanReport.com. The title is written by Mark Overstreet. Very, very good article. The title is Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court, or the First Circuit Right About the Second Amendment? And I would urge everyone to read this and really understand, follow the links to its important background information. Okay. So what you said about Heller, and by the way, for those people listening now, DC v. Heller, that was decided in 2008, and McDonald v. Chicago, again, pertinent to this discussion, decided in 2010. And Keith, as you said, well, I thought this was, you know, people would say, I thought this was all settled by way of Supreme Court via Heller or McDonald. Well, not so fast. So continue. I just wanted to kind of shoot that in there so people know what we're talking about.
So what's going to happen here in this Warman case, obviously, is that it's going to boil down to, if it winds up getting taken up on certiorari to the Supreme Court, there would have to be a certified question. The certified question is basically going to be one particular question that the court is asked to take into consideration and then render an opinion on that would ultimately support or strike down the decisions of the lower courts.
Okay.
Go on. This is all about, Okay, and the preamble to this article, Warman, upholding Massachusetts' ban on assault weapons, and for, which first of all, there's no such thing as an assault weapon.
That's right.
That's a misnomer. And ammunition magazines that held more than 10 rounds. And so Warman has been appealed to the Supreme Court. So, you know, what's interesting here is it's going to boil down to, I think, a common usage, question about whether or not what they classify as an assault weapon. And of course, the scary black rifle, the AR-15, is going to be at the heart of that. And certainly, the 30 round magazine as well, too. What I find interesting here is that, you know, and I live a stone's throw from Massachusetts. I was actually born and raised in Massachusetts. So let me tell you right now, the best damn thing that I ever did for myself was get the hell out of that fecal hole. It is an absolute pit. It's a beautiful state. Geographically, it's a beautiful state. But I will tell you something, that the leftists, and it's really kind of sad that the birthplace of the American Revolution, what gave us the American Revolution, has now become a cesspool, an absolute cesspool of liberal ideology, of progressive ideals and progressive governance.
Mm-hmm. Sad. It is sad.
It is absolutely sad.
And, you know, we can apply that whole, what you just said there. Every place that there's a leftist, Marxist, communist moron in charge, look what they've done. I mean, if you're happy walking down the streets of San Francisco, you know, having to sidestep piles of crap on the sidewalk and, you know, the oppression, the whole state of California, actually, or what they did in Mass, like you were talking about. Man, it just sucks. Go ahead.
Let's clarify one thing, though. You know, you said the progressive morons, but here's the thing. Let's break those down into two separate categories, because the people who are actually drafting and supporting and endorsing and passing these types of laws, I would submit to you, Doug, they're not morons.
Well,
in
that's
fact,
true.
They're very intelligent people who understand how to use laws to gain control and wealth.
The weaponization of laws. Right.
It's the weaponization of laws, and certainly the creating the monetization of victims.
All right. The short bus morons, in my view, then, are the people.
The short bus morons are the people who actually vote for these people.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now, the Healy in the Warman versus Healy, she's the Attorney General of the state of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Correct.
Okay. So the people who look at Martha Healy and say, oh, she's doing a great job, or the people who look at Elizabeth Warren, you know, who the senator from Massachusetts, and they look, oh, she's doing a great job. In fact, she'd do an even better job as president. These are the people who have zero critical thinking skills, period, end of story.
True.
They can't tell you how these laws are making their lives better. In fact, the notion that somehow gun bans and gun-free zones make life safer for people is easily refuted. It defies logic.
I agree.
One of the things that you and I were talking about off air was how I was kind of expecting the mainstream media to really downplay the Texas church shooting. Or to eliminate the conversation about the Texas church shooting, because of course it was a good guy with a gun who stopped a bad guy with a gun.
Right.
Which of course progressives love to say, oh, that never, ever, ever works. But now, you know, I was put in check in that sense. The media didn't not talk about it. The media just changed the narrative to this shock and outrage and this feigned horror that somehow, some way, private citizens were armed in a church.
Yeah, the outrage by Bloomberg. My goodness, I had to listen to Bloomberg like two or three times to make sure I was hearing properly what he was talking about. You know, his outrage over exactly what you just said. Oh my goodness, there are people that carrying weapons and normal people, you know, what he called, I think he said normal. The average person shouldn't have weapons. Are you kidding me?
While he'll say that while he's traipsing across the frozen Arctic tundra of New Hampshire with his armed security detail.
Exactly. So, I mean, these people,
But he's a billionaire though, Doug. His life is worth protecting with guns. Yours and mine and the lives of everybody listening to this program because, well, you're just a commoner. Your life isn't worth saving, but his is.
His
friends are. And Jeffrey Epstein's would have been if he hadn't hung himself. Oh, that's right. Wait a minute. He didn't kill himself.
Epstein didn't kill himself. I have to throw that in there. All right. And it's true. I don't believe he did, by the way. I believe he's dead. Number two, I don't believe he killed himself because I get emails and questions all the time. Yes, I believe that he is dead because dead men tell no secrets. And number two, I think that he was suicided. But that's just my two cents. All right.
So getting back to the whole issue of the questions here or the just the court cases in general. So, you know, the Commonwealth of Virginia can pass these laws and then it will take 3 or 4 or 5 years for these things to go through the appeals courts and then the circuit courts and then eventually work their way up it's not a guarantee that the Supreme Court would ever take that case up on certiorari.
True.
So you're looking at 3 to 4 to 5 years before the courts would ever rule it to the point where Virginia would have to it would actually have to act upon that court ruling.
True.
So the residents of the Commonwealth of Virginia are now screwed for however long, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whatever. So you know, ultimately it boils down to, I think, the question of are the lawmakers in the Commonwealth of Virginia actually going to stand their ground and push this thing through and risk it? Or are they going to back down in the face of overwhelming opposition to this initiative?
And again, stop right there, because in my view, their idea of backing down would be to say, okay, all right, we're going to ease up on these bills. We're going to change the language. So we're going to grandfather in your existing weapons, but any future weapons after a certain date, then you're going to have to register or it will be illegal, whatever. So what I'm afraid of. What I'm concerned about, not afraid of, but what I'm concerned about is that people are going to hear that and say, oh, okay, well, we won. No, you didn't win.
Right. Right. And that's where, again, that's surrender on an installment basis. You just made an installment payment towards the ultimate surrender of your firearms further down the road because you didn't say no, no. And here's the thing. Go back to the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. Read the wording. Tell me what the wording says. Shall not be infringed. Are you infringing upon the Second Amendment? Yes or no?
That's so hard to understand, Keith.
Okay. Yes. Yes or no. This is, I mean, it's not rocket science.
Well, I don't know. What do they mean?
Write a thesis. Yes or no. Yes, your laws that you are trying to pass are infringing upon the Second Amendment, or no, they're not. Oh, and by the way, when we talk about the well-regulated militia, the first portion of the Second Amendment, what they are talking about is an educated public.
Are you sure about that?
Absolutely. If you want to check the wording in the Dick Act, you can certainly go ahead and do that. And it clarifies exactly what it was because the term militia adopted a different meaning after, I believe it was 1918, I think it was. But prior to the passage of the Dick Act, it's very, very, very clear that the militia was the common people. It was the average people, the teachers and the doctors and the lawyers and the farmers and everybody else that had their weaponry that upon call would gather together. They would get their arms, they would muster up, and they would fight for the common defense of their states or their commonwealths or the country. Period. End of story. That's exactly how it was intended. That's exactly what was intended. And the well-regulated militia part is a responsible and trained citizenry, which when we start talking about now the piece of legislation that restricts the ability of people like me to go in and provide that training.
Right.
And I think what it is they understand that if they just went ahead and did a gun ban, period, end of story, sooner or later, the Supreme Court is going to strike that down as being unconstitutional.
Right. I agree with that.
So what we're going to do is we're going to attack it on a bunch of different levels. We're not going to attack the Second Amendment individually. Now we're going to attack all of the different supporting, for lack of a better term, industries. And I don't mean that in the industrial sense. I just for lack of calling it anything else.
Correct.
The different industries that go and support that. Okay, well, if nobody can get firearms training, Well, you know what? Then we're impeding the ability of people to be able to go out and feel comfortable to use a firearm. There are people who will never, ever pick up a firearm unless they've actually been properly trained.
That's right.
I've dealt with a number of those people. I want to get a gun, but before I even touch that gun, I want to be trained and taught in how to use it and what the safety concerns are, so on and so forth. And that's the type of person I absolutely applaud. Yes, get yourself the best training and the greatest amount of training that you can possibly get when it comes to firearms.
And Keith, I got to tell you, I had an incredible teacher.
Yeah, I heard about that guy.
Keith Hansen.
He was pretty good, huh?
I'll tell you what. the best trainer in my view, bar none. But anyway,
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you're an asset, by the way, to everyone listening. I believe what you're saying is so important to me right now. And you know what, Keith, if we lose this battle, if the battleground is Virginia at first in the, you know, the first of all of the states, if that's where the battleground is, if we lose this battle, we've lost our republic. I believe that.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, you know, it's the Second Amendment is the one right that supports and defends the existence of all others. Yep. If you don't have the Second Amendment, yeah, it's awfully easy to herd people. And I hate to use the reference, but it's easy to herd people into cattle cars when you're the guy with the gun and you got 100 people who aren't. One guy with a gun can control 100 people who aren't. And you may not have 100 rounds in your gun, but nobody wants to be the first or second or third to take it.
Try me. At this point, you know, and I look, I understand what you're saying. And I never, watching the documentaries, I could never understand the, there are more of us than there are of them. In those cases, there were many, many more of them than there were with the people with the guns. I could never understand why, you know, a bunch of guys didn't say, all right, well, let's rush them and, you know, Godspeed. Mm-hmm. But it didn't happen. And again, you know what, Keith, I just, right now I'm looking at this, it's not just Virginia, it's going to be all across the United States, but I'm looking at this and to me this is so important. This is all, you know, for all the marbles, I believe. And I have another question for you because people have been asking, where's President Trump on this? Why isn't he saying anything? And, just what the hell, you know, why is he allowing this in air quotes to go on?
I think he's letting the situation in Virginia run the course. I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm not going to speculate why he hasn't gotten involved in this conversation yet.
Okay.
But I think he wants to let it play out and see exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. I think he will. I mean,
he's the kind of guy who has no issue opining on a variety of different subjects. But I mean, clearly this is not necessarily a case for the executive branch. I mean, this is a legislative issue on a state level. And then ultimately it'll become, you know, in the arena of the judicial branch.
Correct.
Going up there.
So exactly.
I don't know. I, to be honest, I don't know why he hasn't. I think he's probably watching it and waiting to see what's going to play out with this. And then I'm sure we would wind up hearing something from him at some point. I got to be honest with you. I'm really kind of surprised that this whole issue is coming up in, of all places, Virginia.
Yeah, well, Virginia, exactly.
It's kind of one of those places that you look at and say, well, you would kind of think it's Second Amendment safe. It's not New Jersey. I mean, you would kind of expect that this is behavior that would come out of Massachusetts, for instance, or Illinois or California or New Jersey or Maryland, but really not Virginia. It's kind of surprising.
Okay. Have we looked at the reasons why? Why Virginia? Why not? See, I've got questions like you. Why Virginia? Why now? I mean, who's behind this? Because Northam is not doing this on his own. And the bad guy here, the really bad guy in my view, is Mark Herring, the attorney general. He should never allow this to go on, being part of the judicial branch. But anyway, why now? And why there? Why not California, as you said? Or why not New York or New Jersey? Do we know the answer to these?
I don't know. How I could speculate would be that because they feel as though they have the support. They feel as though they have a sufficient number of votes from both Democrats and Republicans, and that they have sufficient support in all three of their branches. that they have the legislative support, the executive support, and the judicial support, and that they could move forward. And I think you've got other states like New Jersey and California and Illinois and Maryland that are watching very closely and saying, hey, you know, we could take a lesson from this if this is successful. We're watching it because we look at it and go, this is a powder keg and this could end badly. And right. I think you've got the progressives that are looking at it, the progressive lawmakers that are looking at it and saying, well, you know, this could be a roadmap to how we could construct our own highly restrictive gun laws moving forward if Virginia is successful in doing this.
And, you know, you had said something to me, I think this is a couple of shows ago, when we were talking about this, and when specifically talking about, or in general, talking about the anti-Second Amendment initiative or initiatives. You had mentioned Bloomberg, of course, and Bloomberg is, I mean, this is a Bloomberg initiative. And by the way, folks, Bloomberg had said, and he's on record saying that China is not a dictatorship, this in the wake of the Hong Kong protests. And for him to say that, it just blows my mind. He's actually backing communism. He said this back in last September, by the way, in an interview, his firing line. But this is kind of a Bloomberg initiative, or not kind of, this is a Bloomberg initiative that, that's going to affect a whole bunch of states here, depending on what we see in Virginia. So yeah, all of this. Oh, and one more thing, Keith, because people are going to be asking about this. There's a comparison made between, well, if the counties can declare sanctuaries for illegals, for the illegal invaders, regardless of the state, let's say the counties or municipalities can declare, yeah, we're going to give sanctuary to illegal aliens, to illegal mm-hmm. invaders. Then shouldn't the, in this case, shouldn't the counties in Virginia have that right, the same right to declare Second Amendment sanctuary counties? And I got this in an email and made me think, and I did some research on this. And the important fact here is you're dealing with a commonwealth, and you're dealing with a commonwealth that adopts concept of Dillon's rules, which means that the state has the ultimate authority over the counties mm-hmm. in matters of in state matters or in commonwealth matters. So it's different talking about that than a federal matter imposed upon a state. So I just want to make that clarification or distinction. And I think there's 39 states that adhere to Dillon's rules as opposed to, I think it's, Cooley law or the Cooley, doctrine, which, says that the counties or, municipalities have a greater say over the, state. But anyway, I just want to make that clear because I've gotten emails mm-hmm. about that. So we continue, man.
Well, and the issue between sanctuary states, you know, we turn around and we say, well, you know, a city or a county can't, as conservatives, we say, well, these cities, counties, towns, municipalities cannot declare themselves sanctuary cities or sect. It's wrong. And then we turn around and we say, well, then the state and the federal government should cut off funding to those states if they want to continue to defy the laws. But then we turn around and then we say, and it's a seeming contradiction. And I'm going to address that. But then we in the same breath turn around and we say, well, you know, congratulations to all of these 90 of the 95 counties in the state or the Commonwealth for passing these sanctuary county policies and we support them. And then of course we would say, well, if the Commonwealth of Virginia or the federal government decided to cut funding off to these counties as punishment for adopting the Second Amendment sanctuary status, that would be wrong and ethical and moral. And so somebody, you know, logically would look at that contradiction and say, well, how can you justify that? Well, here's the thing. We're talking about a right that is guaranteed by the Constitution of the United States. Can you please show me in the Constitution of the United States where it says that we are not going to have immigration law or that we should afford every opportunity to people who violate a federal law to come here illegally?
There it is.
I don't see that anywhere in the Constitution, but what I do see in the Constitution is the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Amen.
That's how I justify that. It's not a contradiction.
That's right. And I agree with that. Maybe I went too deep or too legalese with this, but there it is. You're talking about a law or a state law or a commonwealth law that is antithetical to the Constitution. Wasn't that decided in some Supreme Court case somewhere back in 1803, maybe? Just curious. Yeah, it was. All right. So, and you're right about the, it's contradictory to the Constitution. And there is no sanction, or sanctuary built into the Constitution for illegals.
And this is not a, and so, you know, ultimately what, now this is the second portion of that. Now you have the people who would turn around and answer how I just explained that and say, well, okay, so what you're doing is saying that it's a states' rights issue. Okay. Right. Well, you know, first of all, the federal government has, the federal government, think about what the federal government is tasked with doing. Okay. They are tasked with, among other things, protecting the United States, the citizens of the United States and the respective states from foreign invaders. Our immigration policies provide a framework for which that can occur and through which that can occur.
Okay.
That's the first thing. Okay. The second thing is that the Second Amendment of the United States, that is something that is a right. It's not a right. It's a protection that's given to the people. It's basically saying what the federal government cannot do. And remember, the 10th Amendment, okay, any rights that aren't given to the federal government are reserved by the states and the people therein. So the federal government, the state has no right to get involved in Second Amendment issues because that is clearly a right that is given to the federal government. Or more appropriately, I shouldn't say a right that's given to the federal government. It's a right of the people that's given to the people by God, recognized and protected by the Second Amendment, and is a message to the federal government, you shall not infringe upon the rights of these people to keep and bear arms because the right to self-defense and the right to protection and the right to one's own life is something that is divine. And so correct. No man shall have purview over that.
It is a limitation of our government, of the government intervention in our
that
lives.
That is correct.
And I love it. I love it. Yep, exactly. So, you know, you had mentioned having off-air conversations. This, I believe this is one of the finer investigations about this topic anywhere, available anywhere. I would put this conversation up against any media conversation. I believe everything you said is dead nuts accurate. And I think, these people are spoiling for a fight. They really are if they continue down this path. And they just might get it. And if they get it, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, I don't have my crystal ball. I know you don't either, but it's not going to be pretty. What happens next is not going to be pretty.
Well, and I guess ultimately it boils down to the willingness and the preparedness for the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia to stand their ground. And how far are you willing to go? You know, everybody says, well, you know, if they were banging on your door, I would come and I would support you and I would defend you and I would do all this. You know, and of course, you know, we talk about that and it's hypothetical. There's nothing that's actually occurring. But if you have, and you had mentioned actually, was it 18? There was going to be a task force of 18 state agents.
Yeah,
that were
there was a. I don't remember exactly if this was how this was formed, but I think this was a funding bill proposed for 2020 that would allow a group of 18 enforcement officers to enforce this to enforce, I think it was Senate Bill 16, to enforce all of the tenets of that particular bill. But 18, can you believe that? I think they're going to need a bigger boat. But 18, that's the funding. That was the funding.
Okay, so let's assume for a moment that you're going to break that up into three. So you got 3 6-man teams that are going out to seize firearms.
Yep.
So the next thing you know, you got a battering ram coming through your front door, and you've got a team of 6 guys that are coming through. How many people are going to pick up their rifles and come and defend you and support you?
I hope all of you. I hope.
See, and that's where the big question comes in, because you know we would normally say, oh, I'd be right there, I'd be the first one there, but of course, you know, it's hypothetical. There's nothing that's actually on the line. But if that were actually the case, how many people are willingly going to put themselves into almost a situation of certain death to go and stand their ground?
Wait a second. We talked about this before. Here's what I think the great equalizer is. You said certain death. Mm-hmm. I believe because we have these long rifles that are capable of pretty far shots, you know, that's, to me, that's a great equalizer. So, you know, a certain death, hey, how about, How about somebody from 300 yards, 100 yards, 500 yards, whatever the distance might be? You know what? That kind of, you know, that makes things a little bit different in my book. What about yours? You think?
No, I agree with that. But who's going to be the person who's going to who's going to shoot a state trooper?
Well,
and take that on. I think last time I checked, Virginia still juices people down there.
Yeah, I know. You know.
So,
I know.
But are you going to? You know, again, listen, anything can happen.
Yeah.
Okay? I certainly don't want to see a violent end to this. But sooner or later, something is going to break. Something is going to give. And it could this Virginia could be the litmus test. Virginia could be the game changer in this entire thing. As I said earlier, I think the progressives have really painted themselves into a corner here. And there's a pretty tough decision that they have to make. They have to now do a cost benefit analysis on backing down versus standing their ground. Either way they lose. If they decide they want to push this thing, I believe at this point there's enough people, and I mean just in sheer numbers, okay, say you've got 500,000 people who are all, you know, on the side of you're not going to come and take my guns. You got 40 or 50 people within that are just stupid enough or crazy enough to actually go out and start shooting? Yeah, you probably do. Do you have a bunch of people who are probably, you know, ex-military who, you know, maybe dealing with a little instability issues here that are just itching for a fight?
Yep.
Yeah, you probably do. Do you have people like me who are highly trained but who just have this real sense of morality and right and wrong, who don't ever want to resort to violence? But if I look at it and I say I've got nothing else to lose, at that point it's when I go, all right, let's rock. Yeah, you probably do. So, you know, it's just, again, looking at it from the sheer law of numbers, you've got a sufficient number of people involved in this equation here where you've got a couple of elements, I'm certain, that could create a very dangerous situation. So if they decide to stand their ground, then, you know, they're risking inflaming the situation to the point where those people act. And if they back down, well, now they lose face. Now the citizenry understands that if there's something that the progressives are doing that they don't like, well, all they have to do is show up in a large enough number and make enough noise, and the progressives will back down. But, you know, the one thing I ask you is, you know, show me in the history of the progressive movement and show me with progressive Democrat lawmakers where they have a history of backing down. They
Where they back down at all. You're right.
They expect the first or second or third installment payment on our surrender.
That's right. Which is frightening. Now, that is more than concerning. That's frightening to me because, and you know what, folks, I see this posted everywhere by people. Hey, this is foolish. There's no sense of starting a war, meaning us, that we cannot win because we're going up against this leviathan of weaponry, the federal government, the army, the military, police, more accurately. But we're not starting a war. We're not the ones starting anything. We're defending our homesteads, are we not? Or we're defending our rights as Americans. But anyway, I do think that they have thrust this upon us and here we are. I don't know what.
Well, maybe there's a higher calling for this. Maybe there's this is a situation that has been put before the people of Virginia, and this is where a critical decision has to be made. Either you're going to stand your ground and you're going to defend the republic that your founding fathers gave you, or you're going to make that first or second or third installment payment on your ultimate surrender. And it doesn't stop there. Once they get the guns, that's when they can pretty much do whatever it is that they want to do.
And that's
the first thing. Throughout history, when tyrants, when dictators, when monarchies, when they take over, the first thing they do is disarm the citizenry.
That's right. They don't want the guns. They want us. They want control, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right. It's like, you know, I saw a great t-shirt the other day. It's great. I had a picture of Donald Trump sitting there on a chair, and it just said, make no mistake about it. Okay. The Democrats don't want me. They want you. I'm coming just the one standing in between you.
That's right. And see, I believe that to be the case. If for whatever decisions or, you know, look, Donald Trump knows more than I know, than we know. And he's making decisions based on his knowledge. So if he makes a decision that we don't agree with, maybe, you know, look, I don't pretend to know what he knows. So, we elected him to handle certain decisions for us, but you're right. He is the stopgap between what we know or what is commonly termed the deep state or whatever that, entity might be and us, the commoners, the unwashed masses. So you've really, wow, talk about a vibrant discussion. Like I said, I put this up against any other discussion. Got about three minutes left here, I think. Closing comments, thoughts, whatever.
Well, you mentioned China. And yes. I don't know if you happen to catch the article that came out. It was in the Independent Sentinel, came out New Year's Eve. Headline, China wants private ownership of guns banned or severely restricted in the United States. State-run Chinese media, the Global Times, claims that, quote, mass shootings are shocked in a U.S. allegedly governed by law. They want private gun ownership banned or strictly restricted.
Well, who in the hell are they to be telling us what we should do? And by the way, that should be the poster, the exhibit A for keeping our guns. Go on.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, one of the things we've talked about in the past is the Hong Kong situation. I don't know how any single person can look at what is going on in Hong Kong right now and still advocate for the government being the only ones having firearms.
Agreed.
And you know, it's interesting how quickly we forget. Do you remember the skirmishes that were taking place in Venezuela less than a year ago where the military was running private citizens over?
Yes.
Guess who has the guns in that situation? Guess who doesn't have guns?
Well, gee whiz. Not the runny or the people being run over. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting how that works. Huh?
Isn't that interesting? Well, Keith, my friend, I'm glad we're teaming up, and I'm glad to I'm so thankful to have you on our side and as a beacon of conservative voice all across America. And I want to say, we're in for some good times this year. And I would urge everyone, how can people, follow you? Are you going to be reactivating your Twitter at all?
Well, it's still alive. I just don't use it, but it's at Real Keith Hansen. At Real Keith Hansen on Twitter. I know the website is under development right now, but KeithHansenShow.com. And there's going to be a multitude of ways that people can tune in, but, you know, share your thoughts with me. And certainly, you know, the YouTube, that's up, leave your comments, your thoughts. I pop in and check those out from time to time. So if people have questions, certainly, more than welcome to leave a comment there, and I'll do my best to try to get back to it. But, you know, we got a lot of good things coming up. We got some exciting things coming up here in 2020. Great way to kick the year off. And I tell you, it's going to be a lot of stuff to watch. So we're going to have a lot of things to talk about.
You're the man, brother. I want to thank you. Thank you. We'll talk to you soon. We'll talk to you again. I'm going to give you a call after the show, and we'll talk. All right, brother. Take care.
Sounds good.
All right. Folks, the Hagmann Report right here on Global Star Radio Network. Stay with us. Next up, Stan Dale.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. This is the first Tuesday, first show, Tuesday, 2020. And of course, if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesdays with Stan, standeo.com. That's standeo.com. So good to have him back. I've missed talking to him. And if you go to standeo.com and click on the show images page, he's got a really interesting, interesting array of articles and pictures. And there is Qassam Soleimani. Deceased? Question mark. And underneath it, it's, will a body double? Or was it a body double that was killed? Will Qassam Soleimani reappear? Question mark. Well, I don't know. We're going to have to talk with him and ask him. And before I get to Stan, I want to mention this. Folks, the Hagman line of coffee is out. If you haven't tried it, I would urge you to try it. Oh, what a great reviews, by the way. I want to thank Kevin. I want to thank all the people who have written reviews about the Hagman line of coffee. This is gourmet coffee. Three different types. You've got Detective's Choice, which is my go-to coffee. It's right here. All right. It's got excess caffeine. I'll just put it that way. I'm not going to make any claims, but it's got a big boost of caffeine. That's Detective's Choice. And then there's the Patriot's Blend right here and the Revolution Blend. And I like the Eric designed the boxes and bags and such. Fueling America for the next revolution. That's the Revolution Blend. And on the Patriot, Patriot Strong. For patriots, buy a Patriot. And then, of course, my go-to. You know, when you need that little extra boost for those interrogations, I don't know how many people caught that yesterday. I mentioned the phone book when I was talking with John Moore. Did you ever have an interrogation and need a phone book? You know what I'm talking about, law enforcement. You know, old school, right? Just saying. I don't know anything about that. But folks, gourmet coffee, really. Our goal is four days from roaster to your door. That's kind of our goal. And we're accomplishing that. Fresh and the best, highest quality beans, the best roaster. Go to HagmanStore.com. 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 And yes, it's a little bit more expensive, not just because it's gourmet coffee, but significant proceeds. In fact, the first checks are being cut today. Significant proceeds go to those individuals, boots on the ground, that are fighting against and investigating and fighting against human and child sex trafficking and slavery. Can't beat that with a stick. HagmanStore.com. All right, with that, Stan Dale from StanDale.com. Hi, Happy New Year, my friend, and how are you doing?
Happy New Year, guys. We're doing fine. We had a little bit of a spate with a rather aggressive cold, and Holly and I are pretty much on the mend today.
Man, you know.
Slowed us down a bit.
You can't catch a break. I know. You sounded bad. Now, you're on the mend, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. Man. I'm glad. You weren't down for Christmas and New Year's, were you? Or were you?
Yeah. Yeah.
You were. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, man.
A lot of, and thank you for all the good wishes people have sent in and phoned in. We do appreciate it. When you're feeling, you know, pretty lousy, that does make you feel a bit better.
Amen to that. And so many people just absolutely love you and Holly. And I've gotten so many emails and notes about you guys. And you're a national treasure. In addition to being a legend, you're a treasure, both of you. So. Thank you. Thanks for being, and you know what, Stan? Thanks for being part of this show. I don't know if I've thanked you recently, but thank you because, a lot of people love to tune in just to this specific episode, this segment. So thank you.
Well, look, thank you for having us on here all this time. You know, I just don't have the resources to do something like you do every day and have all those people on. You're kind of the central gathering place for all of us who are watchman trying to share with folks. So thank you very much for that.
Well, come on in, jump in. The water's fine. Yeah, thanks for being a part of it. So, all right. What's, my goodness, a lot of things happened since we last spoke. A lot of things. My goodness,
yes.
Where to start?
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest kind of elephant in the room of the news today? What's your opinion?
Wow. Domestically, I think it's the, anti-gun legislation. Internationally, I think it's the perception of war with Iran, or in reality, the war, the World War III pending. Combined, I think it's just the chaos coming from A and B. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. And I've been getting emails and links to various stories over, in Virginia and various places in the East Coast, about the gun confiscation probability. If they push that through, widespread across the United States, you can guarantee they will go into a live civil war here in this country.
Yep. I've said that. I think this is the line in the sand, Stan, and I think that we have to understand we can't get snookered. So if Virginia, for example, if they back down, we have to watch to make sure that they back down completely and not say, well, we're just going to grandfather in, but still make future purchases of these weapons illegal. I got a bad feeling about all of this. I really do. People have said, oh, there's going to be a false flag. It's going to be blamed on patriots. At the gun lobby day on the 20th, I just have a bad feeling. I don't know.
I do too. There's just a lot of other folks think the same way. They may ban being able to purchase certain weapons, but for those of us already got them and ammunition, that kind of stuff, what are they going to do? Come house to house and confiscate it?
Well, they do have the 4473 forms, gee, who'd have thought they would serve for that purpose, those forms. Of course, we were assured they weren't going to be. Gun registration, gun confiscation, tied at the hip. And your question is, what are they going to do, go house to house? No one wins. No one's going to win there. No one.
What was it Charlton Heston said famously? You'll get them over my cold, dead hands, or dead body, and whatever. I mean, sorry, what did he say? Yeah, you'll have to pry them out of my cold, dead fingers. Sorry. I had to get my producer there to tell me the right thing. Thanks, Holly.
Hey, Holly. Great job. Hey. By the way. Yeah, I have to admit my sin, Stan. You speak about Charlton Heston and prying for my cold, dead hands. I was kind of bad. There was a Clint Eastwood Dirty Harry marathon on Sunday on one of the obscure cable channels. I had to sit and watch that to get my testosterone build up again, anyway.
Yeah, we've got the whole collection of his DVDs, the Dirty Harry and everything else. And, I think often of that little phrase, I got to know.
Click. I think that was the second one. And the first one, yeah, there was one left. And I think that was Dirty Harry, and then Magnum Force, the second one. That was Click. Yeah, I got to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right. Now, on your second thing on international situations, I think unless you were kind of holed up in the wilderness without TV, radio, phone, or whatever over the last 7 days, or last even 5 days, I guess, you would have seen about General Qasem Soleimani being killed by a U.S. drone attack. Now, I have no beef with that. I think for a long time, for the last 20 years, that in my opinion, he should have been taken out. Because this man had, 10 years ago even, admitted that he had a network, at least one, in the United States. And to prove it, he wrote a personal letter, handwrote it, and had it delivered to the Secretary of Defense there in the Pentagon on his desk while he was out of the office for a few minutes. So someone in the Pentagon acted as an emissary for Soleimani to get right in and touch the desk of the Secretary of Defense while he's there in the building. So, believe me, this man's network is still there, even though he may or may not be.
Wait a minute. I'm not sure I know this. Or I'm not sure people know this. You're telling me that Soleimani had the ability to get a note to say that again.
A personal handwritten note in a, you know, in a letter to the Secretary of Defense without him even knowing who delivered it.
Oh, that doesn't make me feel good.
No, and I've talked about this, gosh, what, 10 years ago when it happened. And I think, oh, gosh, it got worse as we progressed. And one of the things, you know, he's on my Antichrist potential list, Antichrist or false prophet, whatever. I've got the bad guys listed there. In fact, if you go to 55. Slide 55, right, click on that. And you'll see that I said deceased, ? 2 January, and it's over a picture of Qasem Soleimani. If you click it, it'll take you over to my show images page for Antichrist potential. And you'll see that I said a couple of things. First of all, there have been many world leaders since World War I, but particularly World War II and the Korean War, who got body doubles for them so that they could put their body doubles out if there was a situation where they might be assassinated. Now, Soleimani is known to be very crafty in keeping himself alive, even though he's appeared at the front of his troops in battle without even wearing a bulletproof vest or anything. He was kind of a legend to his people, and he just couldn't be killed and that kind of stuff. Now, about 4 years ago, I think it was, he was shot and wounded. He had a bit of a head wound. But he didn't die, and he came back to the fight. Now, was it him or his body double? Did he, does he think about using body doubles? Well, when he was allegedly killed in the Iraqi drone attack, he was on a plane full of all kind of innocent people, civilians that he brought with him, family members and whatever, so that if the plane were taken down, it would raise such a stink in the world community that all these innocents were killed just to get him. That it would be a major coup for PR for him. Now, he was not on the plane when he was hit. He was in a vehicle. So did he, and he was traveling with his number two and all kinds of high ranking people in his military organization, the Quds Force. They were all in that same convoy, and all of his key people were with him there in the car that was destroyed. Now, he is a brilliant tactician, and I don't think that he would allow all of his high-ranking people to be in a place where they could be taken out without hitting innocents and, put the whole Quds Force in a mess, in a disarray. So I suspect that, as crafty as he is, that he has been grooming at least one, maybe two, body doubles over the last 5 or 6 years. Now, I may be wrong, but what comes to mind is that in 2000, he started his war with the West, officially became an active terrorist worldwide.
Right.
Now, Nostradamus, again, as I say, is not my go-to guy for truth, or actual fact. But I did remember that Nostradamus said the Antichrist of this age would fight a 27-year war. Now, if it were Soleimani, for instance, he started 20 years ago, and that leaves 7 years more for him to fight. But he's dead, right? So will he return to fight another 7 years? This is my question, and it's just that, a question. So if he does appear again after the 2015, I think it was, the reappearance after he received a head wound. It wasn't a major one. It was a graze in an attack. But he reappeared, and everybody was happy that was in his support team. So just putting that thought forward. All right.
Prior to the show, I looked at this, and I was considering what you had written. I was considering your considerations, and I'm thinking, that's not too far out of the realm of possibility. And for those people who think that leaders and quasi leaders don't have body doubles, they do, folks. They do. It's no big deal. People think, the President of the United States, by the way, as an example or as kind of a similarity, do you know, folks, every president in office, they plan their own funeral, they practice their own funeral, okay? And people might think, well, that's pretty bizarre. Okay, there are body doubles. Expand your mind. I mean, understand how things work. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that. But yes, You had me really thinking about this. Very
well. Look, the listeners can go online to Google or something or Bing and search for world leaders' body doubles. Mm-hmm. And you will see they will list out all of the well-known leaders of nations who have had body doubles and who may still have.
That was born out in Iraq with Saddam, right? Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, knowing how clever, and believe me, he was, Soleimani, how clever he is as a tactician and as a morale booster for the troops over there, he would have thought of this himself. And it's like, you know, escape tunnels, but escape body doubles and whatever. And if his body double were purposely put in the line of fire there in Iraq by Soleimani so that he would apparently be killed, then, you know, he is planning to come back and have such a worldwide support for him as a mystical, you know, guy that survived death that he's going to be almost unstoppable in his tactical moves to achieve the strategy of world domination for Islam, his brand.
Wow. Given the PR or given the publicity surrounding his reported demise, that would certainly set the world on its ear.
Hmm. Can you imagine in Iran and perhaps other countries as well in the Middle East what the response would be if he reappeared and said they can't take me down? You know, I mean, even if it was a body double, they'd say this guy is so crafty. The West just can't get him, you know, and it would be a rallying call to all the terrorist-based quasi-Muslim-type organizations and people in them.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think out of the box, you know, I'm that way. But sadly, I've been right quite a few times in this kind of stuff.
Interestingly enough. And I would urge everyone to go to standale.com, folks, standale.com, show images page, and click on the image 55, and that expands into a kind of a chart of different individuals, including Soleimani. So, wow, yeah.
Mm. In that chart, I think the first one on the left is Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, the de facto ruler. And then at the right end is Qasem Soleimani. Now, those two guys hate each other. Their brand of Islam is different. The Saudis is more peaceful. The Soleimani or Iranian brand is more terrorist and violent terrorism oriented. So Mohammed bin Salami wants Soleimani dead, or he wanted him dead. He wanted the whole regime to be taken down because from the religious point of view in Saudi Arabia, he was a faction of Islam that was not doing any favors to the faithful of Islam, you know, just the normal Muslims. It's strange enough, in some of the Quran documents or surah, they do mention a bad actor like an antichrist coming with certain kinds of devices to number people. So even the orthodox and peaceful, so to speak, Muslims do recognize that an antichrist is going to come on the scene in the Middle East. Will they recognize, Soleimani as a possible one or Mohammed bin Salman? Maybe not immediately, but, you know, whoever it is, there will be a time when the world will suddenly see him unveiled. And I hope at that time that the church and the house of Israel are under God's protection somewhere.
Amen. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's hard to fathom how bad things will get.
Mm. It is. And we've been warned, and even though we've been warned in prophecy, we see these things happening around us in the news. And I, for one, am always amazed at seeing it. You know, the actualization of the prophecies right in the newspaper. You know, I think, holy cow, this is it. This is it. This is what we've been talking about. But it's even worse than I thought.
Exactly.
Yeah. The Shiite Islamic terrorists are the Iranian-based terrorist groups all over the country, all over the world, sorry. And the Sunnis are the more peaceful ones under Mohammed bin Salman. But understand that Mohammed bin Salman himself is representing the Sunni branch as a leader, and he practices beheading like the Antichrist will do in the tribulation period. So I don't know whether Soleimani has been using that technique, but he certainly killed hundreds, if not thousands, of his own people for not following him and the Shiite religion. Anyway, that's enough.
Comforting. Yeah. Okay.
Just keep looking at that. And now at slide 52 underneath that, I show the DEFCON level warning system. Now the text under 50, on 52 says visit DEFCON website. And so, I'll just click that. So I'm over there and you visit that and you check on the history. Or the levels. Let's take the levels of DEFCON. The DEFCON has five levels, the lowest level being green, where, you know, everything is kind of, number five is named fade out or blue alert. And if you click underneath that, it says what it's about. And it says DEFCON 5, the lowest one, is of normal state of readiness. Level 5 means we're in a complete and total state of peace and have no immediate need to be on high state of alert. Well, you know, we're not going to see that for some time, haven't for some time. And so if you then go back to level 4, which is underneath where we are now, that's called Operation Double Take. And that's a state of green, you know, number four, color green. And if you read that, it says DEFCON 4 is also called Double Take or Green Alert. And it's an increase in intel gathering and strengthening of security protocols. DEFCON 4 is considered above normal readiness. Now, we're not there now. We're at the level above that. The DEFCON 3, which is called Roundhouse or Yellow Alert. DEFCON 3 is also called Roundhouse or Yellow Alert, is an increase in alertness and military readiness level. With DEFCON 3, the Air Force is in a higher state of readiness level so that they can deploy and mobilize within 15 minutes. The alert color for DEFCON is yellow, blah, 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 blah. It's like a caution sign of, you know, a yellow light on the traffic lights. You'll get ready. Things are about to change. Now, there's a history of those kind of things. Let me see if I can just find that history link. Okay. When was the last time that DEFCON 3 was announced in the Pentagon? And it was on September 11, 2001, at the attack of the Twin Towers. That was DEFCON 3. Now, DEFCON 2, which is pretty serious, was on January 15th, 1991, when the Gulf War started. And, 1973, a yellow alert like this, Yom Kippur War.
Yep.
And Cuban Missile Crisis was a DEFCON 2 in 1962. So I've put this in there in the show images page for people to know what the current level is. And I'm going to leave this up for however long it takes up at the top of my show images page. It says current DEFCON level January the 7th is today, and it's updated real time so that we get the current level whenever it changes, and they allow us to know the change because they don't always post this to the public that say they've gone to DEFCON 2. But as soon as they release that, the state of change, it will appear here on the show images page at the very top. And anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's kind of necessary right now. In slide, 53, I've reproduced what's on our webpage today, but I put it here so it'll be there for the week at least. It's called Urgent, and Holly and I put this together. It's called War Drums from Iran Intensifying. A state of clear and present danger exists everywhere in the United States and for her overseas citizens. The probability of a nuclear attack on the United States homeland demands urgent safety measures be put in place for EMP events. The company, EMP Shield, which Tim and I formed 3 years ago, is a certified government contractor. Now, that's all I can tell you without breaching security. For now, we can make about 1,000 EMP shields per week available to the public. That's our factory over in Kansas. So we're not saying that, you know, get one while stocks last. We're saying that's all we can do per week. Now, for consumers who have ham radios, solar power, wind power, or generator power on their property, we will mark their orders as highest priority because they are communication priorities that we need and power that we need distributed through the community. However, we will still allocate 70% of our production to the rest of the public. So we're not leaving anybody out. We're just putting certain priorities for things that need to be done.
Yeah.
Now, January the 5th, after President Trump took out that terrorist Soleimani, Iran's leaders began threatening nuclear paybacks. U.S. pundits theorize Iran would be most likely to attack these six major American cities. And I'll just click on that link. Oh, I can't. It's not live. But anyway, it's in blue. It says on our website, you can click on that and see. In fact, on the next slide, I'll show you where you can click to get the live part of it. Still, other experts feel they and sleeper cells may attack rural America, not just major, you know, big cities or big military bases. They have threatened to also attack rural America so that nobody feels safe. So, you know, even though I live in little Podunk Pueblo, Colorado, we're not safe. And so this is the object of terrorism, is to scare the dickens out of the people you're trying to strike. And so they don't know whether to relax or not. They're looking over their shoulder all the time. And this is, you know, it's doing what they wanted. Mm. Now, we've offered huge discounts already this year in several of the holidays to protect as much of the alternate energy providers as we can before America's hit. We need to have a grassroots group of people, ham radio operators, solar power people, generator type people, wind people, converting that to power. We need to have that infrastructure and have it working so that, news can get out throughout the country if an EMP strike or strikes do occur. Now, our company, the EMP Shield LLC, has been mentioned in a Homeland Security report earlier this year on February the 5th. It's the EMP Resilience Report, and we're listed as one of the places to go to start protecting your instruments, equipment that are dependent on power. You don't want to be hit by EMP. And so Homeland Security, who we talk to frequently, shall I say, has got us listed. It tells you there in the rest of it how to order these things. And then in slide 54, the next of that, you can see visit our website to get the live links if you do it today that are in that thing I just showed you. In fact, I think we're going to have that in there for at least a week so that you can go to our homepage and look at those two articles and get your information, how to prepare, what to do, that kind of stuff there.
Thank you. And folks, you can get even more of a discount by using the go ahead. Say that again. I didn't hear you. Standeo.com/Hagman. Standeo.com/Hagman. You can get even more of a discount. You're the cost. I gotta say the cost for this device is not that. I mean, it's for the protection, the amount of protection that you receive. It's really a good price. It's a good price.
Well, when they go to order, for your show, the discount code to get $50 off every unit you purchase is Hagman, just Hagman, Hagmann. That's all you need to put in when you go to your shopping cart. Now, if we have a sale going, which we do now, and some will be greater than others, bigger discounts, but you'll get the sale discount plus the $50 off each unit that your code will give them. Okay.
Wow.
I know yesterday one lady bought a unit and it knocked $125 off the list price.
My goodness. You'll be paying us to get them. It's very generous of you because I know the cost of production. I know the cost. I know the time, blood, sweat, and tears behind it. And I'll say this. It's very generous. You are very generous and we appreciate that. So thank you. Them.
You bet. And we're doing the best we can with one factory, and we realize we can't help everyone in the country if everyone started ordering. We are addressing that issue with various corporations and the government so that hopefully we can get these out to a lot of people because we need to have power distributed that's not on the main grid so that we can reestablish. There are a lot of measures that have been taken in the last year which are not being made public, which are protecting energy sources that people don't even know we have in the United States. So it's not like the government is ignoring the problem. It's just that anything they tell publicly will tell the enemy. And so we're not going to do that.
Okay.
The time is here. The time is here.
It is.
Okay. Now over to slide 56. That's about the, fires in, let me just see if I can get there. The fires in Australia. As you know, Holly and I've, lived there for a time, and I've lived there longer than her. I did live there longer than her. But, there are so many people hitting the site, which was called the InfoWars, where they talked about nearly 200 people who, in my opinion, are terrorists being arrested in Australia over the last couple months for starting fires. It's a technique that, I'm sad that, has been made public to the potential terrorists in this country and already in Australia, because it gave them the idea, well, if we burn large stretches of the country that they're in, that it will create havoc and financial devastation and, blah, blah, blah. And that's tactical warfare.
Yes.
And it's happening. Now, what was it? $500 million, like 500 million animals in those fire destroyed areas have been killed. And we were watching Fox News this morning. I don't know whether you had time to see it, but they were showing little baby kangaroos that they should have been in the pouch of their mother still, but they're being held in artificial pouches, bunches of them, and being rescued and given water and comfort. Koalas, oh my Lord, so many of the koalas have been killed that they're now an endangered species for sure. And now my children in Australia live over on the West Coast in, Perth and areas north of there. Now, they aren't being troubled by the fires so much as the eastern states, where the huge population density of Australia is. And because so much of it is desert, the concentration of people on the coastal lands is greater than it is here in the United States. So these fires are absolutely destroying the Australian infrastructure and the morale, I guess, of Australia as well. I don't know how long it's going to last, but it is definitely a warning to us and other countries, say like Israel and Great Britain, that the terrorists are ramping up their game. And, how can you stop 200-some fires all running at once in different places when your resources are so thinly stretched? I mean, you can have 150 American firefighters go over to volunteer to help, but you've got to have equipment to help them, trucks and aircraft and stuff to douse the fires with. So it is a real, real concern. Our bases that we have over there that are still kind of, classified are in areas where bushfires are not an issue. But the population over there, wow. I mean, food prices, energy prices, I can't begin to list all of the problems that are occurring from this. It's a master stroke for terrorists to do this. It's affecting us too.
Exactly. And Stan, the only question I had, but one of the primary questions I had is why this year? Why now with these fires? I understand certainly the conditions, certain conditions are right. But I listen to these people, pardon me, these many morons saying, hey, it's climate change. It's because of climate change or global warming or whatever. No, not necessarily. But why now? Is it of all times, of all years, why this level of destruction at this time? I guess that's my question.
I think this is even before Soleimani was attacked or allegedly killed. That what was happening was his global strategy is starting to have tactical activity in it, like tactical fire starting and bombings and killings. It's a lead up to the 7-year tribulation, I think.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that. Because it makes it more real, I suppose. I was hoping you wouldn't say that. It just makes it more real. It's kind of what I thought, if that makes sense. And it doesn't, I don't know. It just, I'm thinking, okay, you're right. It's, I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's go over to some other things that aren't man-made, like the earthquake situation in Puerto Rico and globally. Looking at slide 49, it'll just be a picture. And this is a picture of the southern coast of Puerto Rico. And I have this in here so that you can refer to slide 49 and then 50, the next slide over, showing the earthquakes for the last 7 days on that part of Puerto Rico. Now, there have been over 1,200 earthquakes in the last week in Puerto Rico and north of it in the trench, which we'll look at in a minute. So if you click on slide 50, here you see a few hundred, and one that occurred this morning at 6.4, offshore Puerto Rico on the southern side. Now, what is causing this? I kind of direct our attention over to slide, which, Richter 1, maybe that's the one. Let me just see which one I want to go to. Let's go to slide 47. Now, slide 47 is two pictures that I took yesterday before the 6.4 hit. And this is the 1,100 and some odd earthquakes. Let me see how many it is. Oh, actually, 1,433 earthquakes that were recorded there in the last week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the cluster of them is off the southern coast of Puerto Rico there on the left. And you can see the orange things showing the current stuff, the current day yesterday. And the yellow ones are like a week or something like that. And the white one's a little bit older than that. I think that one there may be showing 30 days. But this shows you that the cluster of small and large earthquakes are developing in the seafloor, northwest of the island and on the southern coast there. Why? I've had a number of people email and say, why? And all I can say is that for some reason, the seafloor in these areas is undergoing stress and stress relief. The fact that a lot of smaller earthquakes are leading up to the 6.4 we had today is an unusual thing in that the earthquakes are growing stronger, not a big one and aftershocks. These are, you know, preliminary earthquakes. Are we going to have a bigger than 6.4 in that area soon? I don't know. But there's something weird going on in Puerto Rico. I mean, it's always been active, you know, for the last 10 or 15 years, but this is exceptional activity. Now, if you go to slide 46 next to that one, you can see this, the seabed and the fault lines well, I say fault lines and the canyons and things that are underneath the water there. And you can see that there's kind of a canyon to the right and in the middle of those orange dots there. And you can look at the picture underneath where, with no earthquakes, and you can see more clearly what the seabed looks like in the area of the earthquakes. Let me just get up there and see where that is. It's the Mona Trough, which seems to be active, and it's a trough is like a depression, a long valley under the water there. And there is a slight connection in the south near Ponce, which it connects to a larger trough, in the south part of Puerto Rico. So something is happening, and the folks that have asked me to comment, all I can say is something's happening. I'm aware of that, but I can't do anything else than just kind of suppose or guess what is causing it.
Wow. Man, that's a lot of dots.
Look at slide 51. Now, this is earthquakes that are over Richter 1. And most of those are going to be in the United States because anything under Richter 5 worldwide is hard for USGS sensors to pick up. You need to go to Europe and some of their sensors and Australia to their reports to see more local Richter 1s. And that's because a Richter 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 even overseas will not shake our seismometers enough in the United States that we can get an accurate fix on it or strength. So it's not a fault. It's just the way it is. And looking at that map, you can see the cluster of them are there in the United States, including Hawaii and Puerto Rico. So why are these areas now becoming active like this? You know, even over in Indonesia, you'll see I think it's 5.9 or 6.2, something like that occurred over on the left of Java. I guess it's just part of what's happening to start the tribulation. I think a big earthquake, as the Bible speaks of, will be coming. And I don't know whether it comes depending on your viewpoint, interpreting the book of Revelation. I don't know whether it becomes at the beginning or the middle or somewhere like that in the tribulation period. But these things are ramping up to a bigger earthquake. And I say that because looking at Puerto Rico, it started off with a bunch of smaller ones, now getting worse and worse and worse. And that's kind of reversed to normal big earthquakes. They happen, and then a lot of little aftershocks and things peter off. This is going the opposite direction. And if you look for larger earthquakes, Richter 5 worldwide, which can be detected by USGS equipment onshore here, you'll see that the activity is still in the Aleutians and all the way to the left side of the Pacific, into Indonesia and all the way down to Australia and north of New Zealand, with, of course, those in Puerto Rico as well. So that tells us the majority of the action at the moment is on the west side of the Pacific, other than Puerto Rico in the southern part of the Atlantic.
Hmm.
Things are busy out there.
Yes, they certainly are. Wow.
Okay. Now, I've spent a bit of time on, you know, terrible news and things. Let's look at one here, which is near and dear to my heart, slide 57, which talks about a North Carolina doctor who saves an astronaut at the space station who was suffering from a blood clot. I had one or two of those here just recently. So when I saw this article, I thought, well, let's read this. And so the doctor got online with the astronaut who was in trouble and started telling him what to do to alleviate the threat of the blood clot, you know, hitting his brain or his lungs. And he's taking basically the same kind of medicine I'm taking, which works really good, really quick. And so anyway, he made a house call by phone to the space station. And he did ask. He said, I had to ask NASA. He says, you know, I don't suppose you'd consider letting me go up there and help him in person, would you? And NASA, of course, said politely, we'll see what we can do, and we'll get back to you.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was good, you know, and fun. So that's not a terrible piece of news.
He didn't tell him to take out, find a back massager up there and start, you know, reefing on that area, right?
No. I learned my lesson there. It's weird. I can actually feel the blood clots on my left side, in the veins. I can push on my skin and roll it around. I can feel them in three places.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm glad to have you around, brother. I'm telling you.
Well, yeah, I'm glad to be around, I guess. I wouldn't vote to be in this time, but here we are.
Yeah.
Now, another fun thing. Slide 43. Excalibur, the sword of the King Arthur legends, they call it Excalibur, is at the bottom of a Bosnian lake embedded in rock. And you click on that, and you'll see a picture of the actual Excalibur-looking sword. From that time period, 700 years old, that's another bit of fun, is to see that, wow, the legend still lives on, and that everybody there thought so too, and that's why they call it the Excalibur, in quotes. Isn't that fascinating?
That is.
I don't know how they stuck it in a stone down there 700 years ago, but there it is.
I guess that would be an appropriate question to ask. How did that happen?
Yes.
How do you do that?
I don't know. I mean, if I were thinking using technology that alleged aliens, you know, possess in their spacecraft, it would be causing the molecules of the stone to align in a lattice, you know, an ordered lattice, and the stone itself be ordered into a lattice, and the two are joined together. When you push it through, there's no resistance because the lattice is allowing you to go in between the atoms of the stone. And that's, you know, if that technology exists, which I think it does in opening doors and solid metal hulls of craft and things like that.
Wow.
Yeah, go on.
I was just looking at the comments. I don't see that question asked anywhere, which is kind of interesting, but nonetheless. Okay. Wow. That's an amazing story.
Yeah. Hmm. It was fun. As I say, you know, Holly and I, well, speaking of Excalibur, slide 44. Holly and I had that farm that we purchased in Australia, in Victoria, kind of west of the fires now. And if you click on that, you'll see a number of pictures taken on our property, which is called, before we even got it, Camelot Acres. And of course, we were married to Castle North of there, in a, medieval period, wedding ceremony, you know, with full knight's regalia and, you know, the ladies' wedding gowns of the time and a sword and, you know, Excalibur sword in my, sheath. And, Holly says that this was on our website. She said, we've always had a thing for castles, knights, and ladies. In fact, we were married in a castle chapel dressed in wedding clothes of the day, complete with a ceremonial Excalibur sword that now sits in a case in our living room on the wall. We nearly fell over when we drove up to this property looking for a place to buy and saw it was named Camelot Acres. It was just kind of meant to be.
Wow. That's a cool story.
That's true.
Wow. These pictures, these are of your backyard in Australia?
Backyard, front yard, yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah. Okay. Well, what kind of a climate, if you don't mind me asking, what kind of a climate was that area comparable to somewhere in the United States?
Well, let's see. At the time, we had a significant amount of rain. Maybe Missouri, that area. By the way, there's one thing about a third of the way down. There's a big yellow tree, you know, with yellow flowers draping down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's called Vossis laburnum. The flowers on it smell so sweet. They're even better than honeysuckle. And, after we left and came to the States, you know, we looked at putting one in here, and then it's then that we discovered that if a dog eats any of the blossoms of this, it kills them. Okay. So we didn't know. Our dogs didn't eat it. That's fine. But, you know, I look at these pictures, and Holly says, oh, I remember mowing the lawns here, which that was what she did, was with a walk-behind mower. She mowed this and over the bunker storage area, which is shown somewhere, I think. I'm not sure. No, I guess not. But anyways, you go down to the last picture where Seismo and Taco, our two dogs, are by the pond that we built for them for water safety, for fires. You'll see in red satellite images or something like that. And if you click on that, this shows the property from the air today, how dry and parched it is. That's the climate has changed there.
Wow.
And it just makes my heart weep because of all the work that she and I put into that place, digging a dam, sealing a dam, filling a dam, recirculating the water for the fish we put in it through a fountain that, bubbled the water and then let it flow down into the pond. And, I'm just trying to see here if we've got any photographs that show the top of that. We mainly showed the pretty flowers and things, but there is no luck there.
How beautiful that is. Wow.
Yeah. It was a fair bit of work. We had to trim a lot of trees and burn a lot of, you know, refuse that comes off the trees. But boy, you know, and I look back at these pictures and I think, how it kind of grew on us. And you walk out and say, oh, yeah, there's the flowers today, beautiful day. But looking at these pictures, it just kind of wows us, you know, that. Oh, we had it so beautiful there. I wish we could have it. We've said this often. I wish we could transport that farm up here to where we are in Colorado. But anyway.
Really? Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough of that stuff.
All right.
Yeah. Now, slide 45. We've been talking, and I did put up some of the pictures of the UFO that Art Bell got the pieces of, you know, where the pieces of the hull were laminate. They looked like various types of metal that were laminated, you know, over an entire hull of the craft, allegedly. And, you know, I thought at the time, boy, that technology we don't have. But then I was proven wrong when I started investigating Nobleclad, who make metals joined together by explosion. And there's a video that you can click on and look at that. Let me see. Which one is that? You're looking at the picture, which I'll talk about first, and we'll talk about the video. This is a cross-section microphotograph that was of the stone or of the metal pieces that were given to Art. And, you know, you can see the fine layers and the metal as though they were compressed together. And in the man-made compressed metal, which occurs now, you'll see that they've got like copper over silver or aluminum or something where they've exploded a stack of metal in sheets. They've exploded underneath the shape charge to force all of these thin metal sheets to join together just by mashing them together, in essence, by an explosive charge. And to the right of that is an A-12 spy plane. Now, A-12 looks like an SR-50, a 51 Blackbird, but it's not really. The A-12 was made for a couple of other factors that set it apart from the Blackbird. You'll see the chine or the edge of the body, that goes around it. You can see that thin edge where the top and the bottom are joined together. That whole structure was made from compressed metal. And seeing how big it is, you can say, wow, there was some effort put into blowing up pieces, thin sheets into one compressed sheet to make this super strong and, kind of invisible to radar type stuff, structure. So we've been using that for a long time. And the fact that Art Bell's, UFO piece came out in the last, 20 years, something like that, sometime in there. When that came out, even then we had secret projects that were using compressed metal. So it could have been a UFO piece, but it could also have been a man-made piece to, stir the waters and get people thinking about UFOs. Now, if you click on the text of that, it'll take you over to the explosion welding process. And
I see that video. Wow. That seems like a pretty violent way of creating or making this.
Well, since then, they have done things like using – let me turn the volume down. Can you hear me still?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I just turned the volume down on the video because this was used until they were able to make magnetic fields, super dense magnetic fields where they would, in essence, explode a thing that shoved a magnetic field, in essence, throughout the metal pieces and use magnetic force to compress them together rather than explosions. It's a magnetostrictive welding process. But in that video, you'll see almost immediately how they take the sheets of metal they want to join, put them down, put all the charge, which is like a white powder with detonators in it, underneath that, and then blow it up and force all these pieces together. So basically what I'm saying is we had the technology then to fool people into thinking, okay, UFOs use, multi-layered structures or, metal structures. One time I went and I talked to Linda Moltenhau about, she was saying there's no known technology that would produce these seared wounds on cattle when they were mutilated. And the wounds are like sealed, around the edge. They don't bleed. And we have no known technology on Earth. And I told her at the time, I said, look, here is a link to a company that my dad and I have dealt with in the past who make ultracision or ultrasonic tools for surgeons so that it doesn't burn the skin. It vibrates at 50,000 times a second, and it vibrates molecules apart, and they get warm, and they seal themselves. And so it could definitely have been used on cattle mutilations for whatever reason. And people, again, would think, oh, wow, we have nothing that'll cut, tissue like that and stop the bleeding and not be burned. And I said, consider this, Linda. I said, we've had our own technology like that for all this time. And that's about as far as it got with her, but it didn't fit the narrative that they wanted. But, anyway.
I've had some conversations with Linda, and it's just interesting. The cattle mutilations aspect of things, I don't know, Stan. I don't know what the heck
You know what I might think it is? If humans are doing it, it might serve a dual purpose in pointing to the mystery of UFOs and aliens to disguise some of our own activities, clandestine activities. Like, for instance, suppose they were looking for BSE, the whirling disease in cattle. You wouldn't go to a farmer's property, to a ranch, and say, look, I want to test your cattle. I think you've got BSE in your herd. This would create a panic, and it would certainly irritate the farmer. But if you wanted to do it without repercussions or, resistance from the farm people, you'd come in with a black helicopter on silent mode, go into the property, take samples from the teeth or the jaw, and take samples from the reproductive organs of these animals to see if they had BSE or even if the DNA had been affected by the BSE. So that's the way the government could run these checks for a good reason without creating a panic. Does that make sense to you?
It does, actually. It does. Without creating a panic, but creating a sub-industry of conspiracy or of, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But that does make sense, sadly, but it does.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Let me see here. How long have we got? 4 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm trying to get to my website. What's happening here? Well, the internet, is your internet running slow today or is it just ours?
This morning, and earlier today, it was running very, there were some intermittent problems, but right now it seems to be okay.
Yeah, the intermittents have hit us at the moment. Anyway, let me just try another computer here and see. Oh, that's not going to work. Okay. Anyway, I was going to cover some of the other news stories we've got there, but the main things we've covered with the fires in Australia.
Right.
And the terrorists using, that technique to hit Australia and to hit us. I think from the evidence that one of my friends found in Colorado Springs, north of there, when they had the fires several years ago, he did find on his property a Dr. Pepper bottle with a rag stuffed down it with flammables in it that didn't get ignited in the fires there. Somehow it missed being ignited, but it was obviously a Molotov cocktail that someone used to start fires north of Colorado Springs. So that was being done here.
Man. Yeah, and I've heard reports from DHS and from emergency services about some of the fires. Now, this has been a number of years ago. Some of the fires in California that we saw throughout the country have been intentionally set, especially around areas of infrastructure, power lines and such. So we have to keep our eyes on this.
All right, my friend. Well, that's
kind
of basically all the goodies I've got to talk about this week. It's certainly been a lot of interesting news and a lot of work to put these links up. But they'll be up there for a week and maybe longer. Some of them I'll preserve them for people that want to look at them later. It's a time when we certainly need to pray for the protection of the House of Israel and the country of Israel and the United States and the Christians and Jews, the believers here.
That's right.
From harm. And I trust the good Lord to answer our prayers and to protect us from the evil that is now rampant in our country, which brings me back to the point about the left, the supposedly Democratic Party, which has been taken over by socialists and communists. There's no doubt in my mind that this is going to force an armed confrontation amongst the people of the United States. It's going to get so bad that there will be no other option but to forcefully remove people from, being a congressman or a senator or whatever who are in this mindset, because they're obviously enemies of the United States. They are traitors. They're creating treason with all the stuff they're doing. There are good Democrats, don't get me wrong, but the left of the party has taken over and they've destroyed the traditional bipartisan, or Democratic Republican type parties.
Stan, you do so much great work. You and Holly, I want to say thank you. How can people support you by way of Patreon or where do they go?
Well, certainly Patreon is a good support for us. They can join there. And I've posted a number of videos on there for the tier two levels who support us. I do announce to tier one as well when we're going to have like a live discussion with them, like you were talking about with Zoom. And because of illness and holidays, whatever, I haven't been able to set that up yet. But I do intend to have, like that Zoom interaction like we did with your supporters.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And I will talk to you after the show about that, setting that up.
Okay.
And I'm still working on the Garden of Eden trip that we took. We're running out of time, so I'll cut it off there. But that will be coming up on Patreon, the first part of it, later this week. I'm just about finished. So.
All right. Well, Stan, I just want to say that you are worthy of everyone's support. And everyone listening right now, support Stan and Holly Dale. Just go to standale.com, and you've got links from your homepage, I believe. I'm looking at this, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think so. I'm not looking at the homepage at the moment because it isn't showing up.
All right. Well, we'll put the links in the program description box. Stan, thank you so very much. And Holly, and thank you both. Thank you. Thank you so very much. And
thank you for letting us have this show time, too. Appreciate
All right.
it.
All right. Bye. Folks, that'll do it. Until tomorrow, may God bless each and every one of you. Thank you for your support for this platform. Thank you for everything you do. Don't forget HagmanStore.com, coffee. Until tomorrow, may God bless you.